All right, so we've talked about the key principles behind all this stuff, and we've looked at the desk now from the employer side. So again, you are now dangerous because now you can at least understand the basic dynamics and what to do with the employer side of the desk. But, you know, last time I checked, there are two sides to that desk. So in order to really bring it home, in order to really understand the full dynamic, you need to understand what's going on from your side. How can you maximize your time when you speak in the interview process? So, just like there are five general models we use for talking about this rather generally, rather openly and broadly, and there are five key elements to the employer side, there are five key factors to the employee's perspective. And they are those items you see on the wall there, on the projector. Getting tuned in, asking the right questions, answering the negatives, salary negotiations, maximizing every opportunity. These are the things you need to do in order to be effective in delivering the message that you are the person we should hire. Okay, that's what it is. So, let's take them one at a time. We discussed earlier that critical time curve. And remember we said, when does the interview begin? When you start preparing for the interview, okay, starts there. It can start perhaps when you pull in the parking lot. It can start when you walk in the door. Maybe that's the first connection. It can start at many different levels, but let's assume for a moment that you've done your homework. You know about the company. You know about the industry they're in. You've done your homework. You're ready to go. You've got your best outfit on, so you look great. Just got your hair done. Shoes are shined. All the stuff. Everything's ready to go. You're looking great. So you feel, hopefully, confident. All right, so what do you do when you first pull into the parking lot?
Get out of the car with confidence.
Wham, slam that door. Arrived. Flip your mirror down.
Check your teeth, make sure there's nothing sticking.
Yeah, hopefully you didn't eat breakfast on the way in, you know, cheese and everything hanging out of your teeth. No, but seriously, check yourself out. What I'm thinking of is when you're pulling in the parking lot, right, you're basically on stage, and you've got to think of it that way. You are in the car, yes. You are pulling down the street, yes. But when you get into that parking lot, maybe as you pull in, you could be cutting somebody off, or you could be taking the wrong parking spot. Or, by the way, do you know how to get there? How many times have you, wow, you know, you zip in at the last second because you're 5 minutes late, and oh, my gosh. Do you ever want to be late for an interview? No. No. Never want to be late. You really want to be really early, like 20 minutes, half an hour? No. Okay, because that person has other things to do, and that all they're thinking about is, why did they get here 30 minutes early? They're sitting in a lobby. I feel bad keeping them waiting, but so there's always that tension. So what's appropriate?
About
10 minutes. So when you pull in the building, or pull in the parking lot, hopefully you don't pull in the building. Although, you know, it is possible. It is possible. So you pull in the parking lot, you park your car. Hopefully you did it. You pulled the car in the right space, a visitor space, hopefully. Not a handicapped space, by the way, because you can't find another spot. What's that? Unless you have that challenge, yes. But typically, I've seen people do that too. I can't find a space, I'm parking there. Okay? So now you get out of your car, you go into the building. You're at the front desk, you're asking for Mr. Jones' office, you walk up, hi there, I'm Mr. Now, is it important that you communicate effectively with the person sitting behind the desk?
Yeah.
Everybody you meet. Good morning. You're on stage, you're on interview time right now. You don't know that that person sitting behind the desk that's controlling the front gate could be the brother-in-law of the owner. You don't know that. So everybody is important, okay? And that's just in general, let alone the fact that you're trying to interview. Everybody's important, right? So you want to treat people with respect and appropriately. So it's a good morning, how you doing? Okay, so before you go to the front desk and announce your arrival, probably a good idea to duck into the bathroom. Now hopefully, you know, guys go into the men's room, ladies go into the ladies' room, but duck into the bathroom. Now why would I have you do that? Yeah, you can. I mean, when you're looking in the mirror of your car there, it's got about that much space, you know. And you shouldn't crawl out of your car, like I said earlier, kind of tucking everything back in and digging and scratching, because it happens. It's amazing what happens, okay? That people don't realize they're in the middle of broad daylight in the parking lot. There's windows on this building, you know, okay? So go into the men's room, ladies' room, as the case may be, and put everything in the right place, you know? Give yourself a vote of confidence. If your hands are a little sweaty because you're nervous, rinse them off. Rinse them off and dry them off, okay? Give yourself a vote of confidence. Look in the mirror, and remember, it's about being confident but humble. It's not about, I look wonderful today, right? It's about, yeah, I've got it together, okay, great, let's do this, we can do this. Remembering what you're supposed to be remembering, right? Volleyballs, teeter-totters, what all this stuff? I got to remember all this stuff, right? You're supposed to be doing that. You have with you what? You have a briefcase? Depends on the situation, doesn't it? Do you have a portfolio, a padfolio? Do you need a briefcase that has like all these latches on it that, you know, springs up? No. Okay, but you should have some kind of a padfolio. Not that you're going to use it, but you'll look prepared if you need it. Because when you're interviewing and you're writing notes, where's your eyes? Did you ever talk to somebody and they're writing like this while, you know, while, and they're looking at you? A little freaky, right? So, you know, so when they're writing like this, they're losing eye contact. So really, I've had people ask me, well, shouldn't I be taking notes and everything the person said? No, because you're there to communicate. You know, if you want to really take notes, then run a video camera. I'm being facetious, obviously. You're never going to do that either. You know, you're not going to say, oh, could you please speak up for my cell phone? You got, yeah, I have a GoPro on your head. Yeah, that's good. No, you're really, you have the padfolio because you really want a place to put a resume or two. So if they don't have it immediately, you have it, you're ready to go. If they ask you to take a note or two, they say, you know, you might want to write this down. Next Thursday at 5 o'clock, could you be here to see Mr. Smith? That's when you pull it out. You don't want to whip out all the research you've done in the company and say, oh, yeah, you know, I had a question. Let me see. It was over here. You don't want to do that. It should be in your head. That's why you prepared. All right, so you go into the bathroom, you give yourself a vote of confidence, you're looking good, you got your padfolio, you're ready to go. What if it's snowing outside, it's 10 below zero, and your feet are covered with slush? What do you do? Clean yourself up, really. You know, take a second. Just wipe your shoes off a little bit. Take your jacket, your overcoat off so that you don't have to, you know, be one of these things when you're trying to get into the office, right? You want to look like you're together, that you're confident. And you will be if you do it before you walk in the door, right? Okay, so you walk through. The first thing you want to do, you walk up to the person sitting behind the reception desk, or let's say the supervisor's back there in the office, and out front is his executive admin, he or she. So you're there on time, and you're about 10 minutes early, and yeah, I'm here to see Mr. Smith. My name is, okay? Oh, he'll be with you in a moment. She'll be with you in a moment. You go down, and you go sit down, right? So they ask you, would you like a cup of coffee? Can I take your coat? How about a massage? Would you like a massage? What do you say about that? Do you want coffee?
I'd say no thank you.
No thank you, no thank you. Who says yes? Anybody say yes? No thank you. Why? Why would you not take coffee? Are you nervous as it is? Do you need more caffeine? Not a good idea. Would you dribble it on yourself? Always happens. Always happens. When you are nervous, you're bound to spill something. What happens if it gets on the edge of the cup and it drips onto the carpet or something? Or you put it on the nice table that's there and it's got to leave the ring. That stuff is stupid, but it means something. You really don't need a cup of coffee, okay? You really don't. Now, if they offer you a bottle of water, you might take that, but I would not even do that. You also don't want to prepare yourself by, you know, putting 3 breath mints in and your tongue becomes green. People do that. Okay, so if you're going to use a breath mint, and I'm being really specific about this because it's very distracting when you're interviewing somebody and they're talking and that tongue is wagging at you and it's green. Okay? So think about this stuff. It's little, but it all adds up. It's like, wow, that's pretty weird. Your tongue's green. Do you know that? Okay, so you walk up to the reception desk. They greet you. You sit down. No water, no coffee. You're just going to sit there and relax. And there's a couple of magazines on the table. Do you pick up the magazine, start reading, kill time? What should you be doing immediately?
Paying attention.
paying attention, everything, you're a sponge, sucking it up. Everything around you, listen, hear, watch, observe.
Praying.
What's that? Praying. Praying wouldn't hurt either. Praying would be a good thing. But really, you're kind of getting tuned in, right? That's what that says, get tuned in. So you're kind of getting surroundings, getting comfortable with the surroundings. Now, do you make little chit-chat with the secretary that's sitting behind the desk there?
If she's not busy
with something else. That's it. You absolutely want to make a little chit-chat with that person, okay? Unless he or she is very busy with something else. You know, the phone's ringing, you don't want to start talking over the work they're supposed to be doing, right? So what kind of chit-chat would you talk to, what would you say to a secretary in that situation? What's everybody's favorite subject?
The weather.
No. Right. Okay? So what are you going to ask them?
How are you?
Don't be afraid to say, how are you today? How are you feeling? How's it going? I'm really excited about meeting Mr. Jones. Now, have you worked with him long? Don't you want to know that? Wouldn't that be great? What's she going to say? No. Or he's going to say, no, I've only been here 10 minutes. But in fact, I think you're here for my job because I can't stand working here. No. Right? Well, yeah, I've worked with Mr. Jones now for a few years, and yeah, he's a great guy. He's looking forward to meeting you. Oh, a little tidbit of information. Oh, okay. That's what you want to do, a little chit-chat if you can do that. If you have the opportunity, you want to get tuned in. Look at the surroundings. What's it like? Is it a very nicely appointed office? What are people doing, coming and going? Are they walking in mad and angry? And, you know, what do you hear in the background? Do you hear behind closed doors, I'm going to get this job done, I'm going to fire you tomorrow. Hi, I'm Mr. Jones. How are you? Right? What are you hearing? Listen, because you can hear that stuff. You got to get tuned into your surroundings. Do you chew gum?
No.
You never chew gum. Do you take phone calls? No, God forbid. Don't ever take a phone call. Put your phone on silent. Stick it in, leave it in the car if you have to, okay? If you're so tempted to look at that text that you just got to get to. Because we're all Pavlov dogs now, right? As soon as the bell rings, now, who texted me? Oh, my God, I got to know that. Could be my boyfriend, you know? I mean, seriously. I've had people pull out their phones in the middle of my interviews. Oh, excuse me a minute. No, it's okay. I'm good. What? What? Really? You know, pay attention. So, although on the other hand, if the interviewer picks up the phone because somebody interrupts them, you got to give them some grace. That's wrong, but you got to cut them some slack because it's their volleyball court, remember? They get to make the rules on their volleyball court to a degree. We kind of know what the rules are now, right? How many times can you hit the ball? 3 times. Very good. So no gum, no coffee, no cigarettes. But if you're smoking cigarettes, you got a bigger problem. Sorry, that's a paid political advertisement. But seriously, you don't want to have a cigarette out in the car if you smoke and then go into his office. You're done before you start. Because you know what, folks? If you do smoke, I'm sorry to tell you, it's still there. I don't care how many mints you put in your mouth. I don't care how much you walk around and spin and, you know, in the weather out there to get the... It's still there. So I know it's a challenge. I know that it's an issue. I appreciate it completely. But you cannot smoke on the way to the interview. Just do it when you get back out of the car if you have to, you know, when you leave. But not going in. That's big trouble. So remember your manners. What if you're in the elevator and somebody's trying to get on the elevator with you? Do you sit there in the elevator and just, you open the door? You open the door. Let them in, right? And you stand there going, you know. No, it's the same thing, right? Good morning. Are you work here? Great. What floor are you working on? It's little stuff that makes all the difference in the world. Be yourself. But remember, you're on stage here. Right? You're trying to convey that you are this person that really cares genuinely about another person that walked in the elevator. It could be the person that's going to interview you. Right? Okay. Office environment, activity, and secretary. So you've got to be observant of everything around you. What's going on in that office at the time? Did they meet you on time? Are they late? Are they early? What's going on? Are people coming and going? What's going on at that particular moment of the day? Is it a high activity place? You get a sense of culture too, right? What's this company culture like if you're sitting in the lobby? So just be observant, do a little chit-chat where you can. The next thing you want to do is now you're introduced to Mr. Jones. So Mr. Jones is getting ready for the interview. Mr. Jones walks out. You're sitting there. You're the only one maybe sitting there. So Mr. Jones is coming and looking at you and coming right at you. You sit there and you wait until they come up and say, are you Susie? What do? Get up. Get up and presume it's Mr. Jones. You have to be Mr. Jones. Hi, how are you? Be the first to genuinely extend the courtesy of a handshake. Don't wait, you know, like you're the next one to be scolded, because that's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. And I'm on the receiving end of that. I see that all the time. Okay? I'll come out, and the person is sitting on the chair, or the couch, and I'll say, hi, you've got to be Susie. And I start, they wait until I get right on top of them, then they decide to stand up. Okay? They should be getting up and coming to me. Meet me halfway. Yes?
And if they have looked you up on LinkedIn, they can see your picture and they'll know what you look like.
They know automatically. That's a very good point. Although that picture is kind of, it is what it is. I did it in my bathroom. No.
You're not one who has the dog up there?
Yeah, not my dog. No. Yeah, and by the way, we mentioned it earlier, but just to emphasize, just like she said about picture, hopefully you Googled me. If you're coming to interview with me, you Googled me, you checked me out on LinkedIn. Don't you want to know that stuff? Even if you don't even use it, even if you don't try to draw an analogy that says, well, I hear you worked at this company before. No, but there could be something that it could be very, very helpful to you. So you want to do all that, right? Because you've done your research. We all did our research, right? Promise me you're going to do your research. Say, raise your right hand. I promise to solemnly swear to do my research. Okay? I will walk in with some research in my head, not in my hands, in my head. So do your research. So Mr. Jones comes walking up to you, or you go walk into the office, and Mr. Jones rises and shakes your hand. Again, what's that handshake like? A nice, warm, firm handshake, not busting knuckles, not wimpy, not sweaty. You don't want to do this before you shake his hand. I have people done that too. Okay, so it's a nice firm handshake. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Jones. Thank you for taking the time to see me. Appreciate it. Very much been looking forward to speaking with you and just having a nice conversation out there with Janie. Okay, so you're basically communicating to that person that you were already chit-chatting with the people out front. I have news for you. Okay, I always ask my admin what they think of the person that just walked out of my office, because they didn't really have a chance to chat. So give me your perspective of that person. Did they appear confident? What did you think? When you talked to them on the phone to set this up, were they cooperative? Were they nasty? What were they like? Secretaries rule the world. They truly do. I would be lost without my executive admin because I couldn't get everything done that I have to get done without her help. And I trust and rely on her insights. I really do. Okay? When I was with King's Medical, there was a young lady that was with me for the entire time I was there. I brought her there from the company I left because that's how much I relied upon her. I said, Jane, you got to come with me. Here's what's happening. Well, it was hard for her to say no because she lived in Hudson and it was 5 minutes from her house. And by the time I blackmailed her to come with me, you know, paid her an ungodly amount of money, she joined me. But my point is, they do rely on that input. They really do. I even go to the receptionist, our front desk receptionist, and I ask her what she thought. Okay, because I want to see whether the person was compliant. Did they treat that person as somebody less than somebody? Just because they're answering the phone, that means they're no good? They're some kind of low-level person? No, everybody in my company knows that every single person that works in this company is equally important. Because at the end of the day, what blew up the space shuttle? Not a $50 million computer, not a person that was trained by, you know, all these experts. That's not what blew it up. It was that little rubber thing. Everybody, when a watch stops working, why? Is it the big piece? Might be, but every one of those pieces in the watch work together. And if you lose one of those pieces, it doesn't work. Everybody in a company is important, equally important. It's not about I'm here, you're there. My job is different because I'm doing this job. Your job is different because you're doing that job. But if we don't work collaboratively, nothing works. Okay? So don't forget that. If you have that approach to things, everybody counts. All those people count. So The interview's attitude. Is the interviewer open, friendly? What are they like? Do they appear to be assertive? Do they appear to be passive? Where are they in that continuum? What's the chemistry like? Okay, do you think like it's working well? Does it fit? So you've got to judge that pretty quick. Remember the critical time curve? You've got one too. Not just for what you convey, but you've got the right to understand whether this is going to make sense for you too. That first 10 minutes is important. What's it like communicating with this person, especially if that's the person that's going to be your supervisor? Right? So you've got an opportunity here to try and understand, are they trying to make you feel comfortable? If they're doing it right, that's what they should be doing because you're on their turf. If I came to your home for dinner tonight, wouldn't you offer me something to drink and sit over here comfortably? And wouldn't you do that? Wouldn't that be the right thing to do? It's the same way in an interview process. I want you to feel comfortable in my office. I want not too comfortable, right? I don't want you to put your feet up on the desk for your sake as well as mine, because it's hard to get up there. But my point is, I want you to feel like you're okay, you're comfortable. I want you to feel relaxed. So it's the same way with you. You want to make that employer feel relaxed with you. Judge their interviewer's attitude. Is it friendly? Is it closed? Are they suspicious? Okay. Are they suspicious? Yes. They're always suspicious. But they're not going to convey it, right? Because they're looking for the candidate who can best meet what? Needs at a low what? So they're risk adverse. Interviewers are risk adverse. Okay, that's the whole point. They want to make sure they don't step on a landmine. So, as you're sitting there with the interviewer in the first 5 or 10 minutes, just like you were sitting in the lobby and you were watching activity and you were looking around and looking at this and seeing what's going on, what's on the walls, when you walk into the employer's office and you're going to sit in the interview, you're not going to rearrange the furniture. And people have done that. They'll pull that chair right up, pull it right up in front and sit there and I mean, it's like, really? Just sit back and relax. Just leave it where it is and relax, okay? But observe what's going on around you. So are there badges of glory on the wall? Do you see diplomas? Do you see pictures of family? Do you see pictures of a dog? Do you see anything at all? Maybe awards they've won. Okay, those things are helpful to you. They might be useful as you interview and discuss things, okay? Any questions about getting tuned in? That's a very important part, right? Because it's the first thing that's happening. You're kind of feeling your way. So you're going to remember that. I got to get tuned in when I walk in the door. First thing. That means this. Okay, tuned in. Just like a radio dial. Remember back, some of you are too young to know this, but there used to be radios in cars that you actually had to turn the dial to tune it in. Remember that, some of you? Someone go, oh, no, really? Yeah, well, there you go. I told you I've been in HR longer than I care to admit. So, yeah, there was a time when you literally had to turn the dial to let the little needle go back and forth to get to the exact channel. Now you just go, and there it is, you know. You even command it, channel 15. It goes. You know, now you talk and it happens. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Dialing in so you're right in the crosshairs so you can see what's going on around you. If you don't get tuned in, you're already one leg going the other way. Yes?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. Useful thinking, in other words, is being fully present.
Yes, that's very good. That's exactly right. Be in the moment, fully present. Because if you're thinking about what you had for breakfast, and oh my God, does my breath stink, and blah, 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 all these other things, yeah, you're not fully present. You can't be fully engaged. You need to be in the moment, fully present. That's a very good observation. That's exactly right. Okay? That's what it means to be tuned in. So now, the last element of tuned in is small talk. Now, the employer's probably going to try to break the ice a little bit, but you can do that too. Okay? It's okay to do that. You can break the ice. Maybe there's something you learned about the company that you can convey. You know, thank you for seeing me today. Especially right now, I know this time of year, from what I understand, you're going through budget season. I'm sure that must be pretty busy for you. So how's it going so far? I mean, it could be basic stuff, very basic stuff. You know, I enjoyed coming into the facility here. You've got a beautiful building. This thing looks relatively new. Have you been here long? It's just little ice-breaking stuff, right? It can't be come in, sit down, and go, hey, that's a picture of your wife there, huh? She's pretty hot. I mean, obviously I'm being facetious, but stuff like that happens. Or they walk in and they walk right over to the awards and they read it. Then they come and sit down. That's not what you want to do. You kind of got to get this stuff from a corner of your eye to get tuned into your surroundings. You can small talk, break the ice, be natural, be brief, let them be comfortable with you. Remember, they're uncomfortable too. It may be the ground, they may have home field advantage, but they still need to get comfortable with you. Okay, so the next thing is asking the right questions. And that's really important. Remember, we talked about the teeter-totter volleyball. That presupposes you will ask questions. But there's things you really don't want to ask. Probably not good to ask. So let's start there. Let's talk about how to ask a question. You'd asked me earlier about, what if this guy won't shut up? What if they're, you know, and I got to get some more stuff in. How do I stop the person from controlling? You know, I'm on, my butt's hanging in the air up here on the teeter-totter. How do I stop them from controlling? We're way past three hits on the volleyball. Well, there's an approach that we can take. You'll see it there in point A. It's make a statement. Okay, and this is basically in response to something that you've been asked. So here, let me diagram it this way. So the employer says, here's my question. Okay? So the question's been asked. Tell me why you left your last employer. Well, let's not go there. That's a negative. Let's just say, so tell me something exciting about you. Great open-ended question. God knows what's going to come out of their mouth. Okay? Asked it before and you'd be amazed. So, yes. Okay? Tell me something exciting about you. That's the question. Now they're expecting a response. So now you're going to respond. And by the way, how long is this response? 20 to 90 seconds, right? Now, the interviewer might set up this question with a five-minute diatribe. Well, you know, we're a Fortune 500 company, and we've been here, blah, 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 and all blah, 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 and yada, yada, yada. So tell me something interesting about yourself. Because they can take as long as they want. They don't have 20 to 90 seconds. It's their volleyball game, right? But they're going to ask the question. It's going to require your response. You heard the question, right? Because you were doing what? Listening. That's the number one thing you got to do, right, when it comes to communication. You're maintaining eye contact. And now that you've heard the question, you're responding to the question, right? Not just saying anything, but you're giving them what they asked for in 20 to 90 seconds. Now, let's assume this person has been pretty aggressive and they've been asking question after question after question, and you've got to turn it around to get it back at you, okay? So after making your response or in the tail end of your response, you make some kind of a statement that allows you to turn it around to ask them a question. And that turns them back into a response. So it's not that hard to do, but it's a little tricky. There's something that we use called a segue. I call it a segue. What's a segue? Anybody in the room a musician? It's a transition. It's the eight bars in the middle of She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. You know, it's that piece in the middle that's not the verses and all that stuff. I know, I'm dating myself, right? So give me a recent artist. Who? There you go. Segments in the worship team. Okay, so it's the middle bars. And the reason for that is it sets up the next segment. Because it's not directly connected to the first segment, but it works together. So the way this works is, if you make this segue a statement about what you've learned, about what you know, something you've learned about the company that you want to ask a question, it allows you to go into the question. So if somebody said, tell me something exciting about yourself, you would say just exactly that. Well, I'm excited to be here, I can tell you that much. I've been looking forward to our conversation, especially after having done my homework and my research and learning so much about the advancement potential here at the organization. In fact, I'm rather curious on how that ultimately can lead to promotability and advancement at your company. Did you hear it? Okay, so I turned it around and I asked them a question by using a statement, a segue, to get to the next one. That's not easy to do. You got to kind of work through that in your head. Okay, but that's how you do it. To get it off of him on you back the other way. So you just took control of the volleyball. And the way to give him back control is to shut up. after he gets done answering, you go, hmm. Now there's that two-second pause when somebody's got to say something. He'll pick it back up again because it's his interview. Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes you'll sit down and the interviewer will say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Just to give you an example of what's going to happen here. I'm going to ask you 37 questions. They're going to be in a row and you can't ask any questions in the process. So please don't ask any questions in the process. We're going to go over these particular questions. I'm going to give you an illustration. You're going to have to give me how you would respond to that illustration. Blah, 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 blah. So what happens there? What do you do? Do you just say, wait a minute. I just came from this workshop and he said three, bud. You got three shots at me and then I'm taking a shot at you. The heck with your star. I'm the star, baby. No, you can't do that. You got to go with the flow. But there will be an opportunity somewhere to potentially slide one in. It might take 15 minutes to get there. So you can't buck the trend. You can't say, I don't care what you just told me because you weren't listening. If you do immediately turn around and ask a question. Those are the only circumstances where you really don't. You're going to be up there with your feet dangling on the teeter-totter for a while. But there will be an opportunity to turn it around. Okay? It's a difficult situation. Hopefully most interviewers you'll meet won't be that way. Most interviewers now use a behavioral-based approach. Do we know what that is? Who knows what that is? What's that mean? Behavioral-based interviewing. There you go. Did everybody get that? Right? So you're trying to get a sense of, by the person's response, what they're really like. How would they really deal with this? How would they behave? Which is the way they call it behavioral-based interviewing. So it's not a yes or no. It's always an open-ended what if. Okay? So you want to ask questions. So you're going to use that turnaround segue to get your question in. Okay, that's how it works. When you ask questions, they fall into three categories. Questions about the position, about the company, and about the interviewer, in that order. Why? So the first questions out of your mouth ought to be about the job. Why? Well, you're there, but you're there to know about the company too, aren't you? Your focus is learning about the company too, though, right? That's it. There you go. I knew you would come up with it if I just kept pushing you. That's okay. That's exactly right. The thing is, they're trying to figure out, can you meet my needs at a low risk? Okay? Well, I already know about my company, so I want you got to sell me early on. Remember the critical time curve? You got that first 10 minutes, you got to make it happen. So, if you're going to ask a question, focus on the job, the position. Ask some specifics. Now, many times you go through the interview and you already know the job. They sent you the job description, or maybe you saw it posted and you have a sense of it. So you're not going to say, so what is this job all about? Because that really looks like you didn't even prepare, right? So you have to understand what the job's about and then ask a probing question related to that information. So you always start with positional questions first, always. Okay? Because that gives you the best opportunity to demonstrate capacity to meet need at low risk. You can draw better analogies. Even if the interviewer says, well, come on in, sit down, let's talk a little bit. Let me tell you about the company. And they go on for 15 minutes, how wonderful they are. Okay. Good. Swell. That's all the reason why you're there, right? Even if it has to, you can say, well, that sounds really encouraging, Mr. Jones. I mean, there's a lot of great information. I have to confess, I've learned some of that, but you've really added a lot to it in my understanding. Could you give me a better sense? I mean, we know what the job is. How does it fit into the opportunity for growth within the company as you've described it? There you go. Now you're on your way. Now he's got to say blah, blah, blah about the job, and now they can say whatever they want to about the role, but you can now hear what they said and draw analogies from your background to demonstrate capacity to meet need at low risk. It's really that simple. Once you understand what's supposed to be happening, you should be able to execute it. Now, it won't come like naturally out of the gate for any of you. because none of us do this. That's why you're here today, to learn this technique. The best way to do it is to put yourself in a situational role play and see it happen. In fact, strangely enough, in subsequent discussions on Tuesdays and Thursdays here, it's in the book somewhere, we're going to go through that process. I'm literally going to take somebody and role play the process. We're going to video record it, and we're going to show you what happened good and what didn't happen so good. Okay? So one of you is going to be the guinea pig. So nobody will show up now, right? No, I'm telling you, it's probably the best of all that we do. It's the best opportunity for you to really learn how to apply this stuff. So the first person that says, choose me, that's the person who's going to learn the most. No question about it. Okay? So anyway, questions about the position, about the company, about the internet. Now, when you ask a question about the company, preface it with a statement. You know, you don't necessarily have to use a segue here. You can ask, you can preface it with a statement. You can say what you've learned about your research. When you say something like that, what does it convey to the interviewer? Yeah, that you took the time to prepare, that you're interested in the position. And I have to tell you, I mean, I do a lot of interviewing. Frankly, this year alone, I've hired 37 people in the last 8 months. So a lot of people have been through my office at all different levels. When I get to the process of interviewing them, very rarely do people ask me questions. I have to pull stuff out of them. So do you have any questions? Anything you want to ask me now? How about now? Would you like to know about this? You know, it's like reeling them in, you know. So you have to be able to ask questions, but if you use your research to get there, it helps make it easy to ask questions. So you learn this point, but now you want to go deeper, right? You want to probe it a little bit. So that's why asking questions about the position could be to your advantage. You learn about the culture, right? You learn about the situation. And you ultimately can find out, is this person blowing smoke? Do they know about the company? Are they relatively new? What's going on here? Are they tuned in to what's really happening at that organization? Tells you something too, doesn't it? Eventually, you're going to get around somewhere near the tail end of the interview, hopefully down the road, because by then, you really can't make mistakes. I mean, you still can make mistakes, but you can't make a really bad one usually unless you're, is that your wife kind of thing, you know. But you do want to ask questions about the interviewer, but they should relate to the role, the company. So, Mr. Jones, I understand based on our conversation that, of course, this position reports to you, and we've already discussed that you've been here for, what, now 10 years. Can you help me understand what your expectations are in terms of an individual working with you? Do you prefer to be collaborative? Do you like, you know, email contact? Is it more one-on-one verbal? How do you manage your staff? Why wouldn't you want to know that? You'd want to know that, right? And a lot more. But it allows the employer, the interviewer, to reveal themselves to you. It allows them to tell you about what they want. So now they know I've communicated to you what I like. And then you can respond in kind. Okay? So it's a very important issue. So you learn about the person as well, about them. And if there's something that comes up that allows you to pat them on the back, use it. You know, like, well, thank you for coming in today. And, well, I'm excited to be here. I really appreciate the chance to talk with you. And, in fact, congratulations. I've learned that you just won that award. That's exciting news. Well, yes, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn now and then. I mean, you know, it kind of tells you something about the guy. I mean, my point is use this stuff to your advantage. Get to know the interviewer. So you're going to ask questions. But you're never going to ask questions, never, about these topics. Write it down. Hours, salary, benefits, travel, and relocation. Did you get that? Wait, uh-huh. What? What did he say? What?
Salary?
You missed it. You're going to have to go back and watch the video now, or the audio. Sorry, I don't give it up twice. It's once or... Hours, salary, benefits, travel, and relocation.
Why not? Why not the hours?
Okay, if they want you, they're going to tell you what the hours are. But if you start asking about hours, it makes it look like you got a problem with when you're going to be here. 8 to 5? You can't make it 8 to 5? You don't want to ask about hours? Travel, benefits, salary, relocation. Why don't you ask about those things? I mean, isn't it appropriate for you to know how much they're going to pay you? Do I got to travel a lot in this job? What's up? What's your main objective in this whole process? Why are you there?
To help them.
To help them to get an offer. You want to sabotage that process by talking about how much you got to travel? 50%. Oh my gosh. I mean, maybe you don't like traveling 50%. Okay. But don't, you know, show it on your face and dispel all doubt. Seriously. Let's see what happens. Because at the end of the day, if you get into that stuff early on, and that's what some people do, I'll say, well, you haven't really asked many questions. Do you have any particular questions you'd like to ask me? Well, yeah, I'm desperate. I got to ask something. What's a pay? You know, at the end of the day, you don't ask about those things. They will come up. There'll be a time when it's appropriate, but it's not appropriate on the first date. You don't talk about that stuff. It'll come up. You'll learn about it.
Okay.
Sure.
If they ask you, what are your salary requirements?
We're getting there.
Is it good to say negotiable?
See number four? We're going there. Yeah. Give me a second. We'll be there. We're almost there. But before we talk about money, which is what everybody wants to do. This is the best part when we talk about money, because everybody goes, everybody sits up on their chairs like those lemurs that jump out of the, you know. Okay, is that what they are, lemurs?
Meerkats.
Meerkats, that's what it is, meerkats. Yep, prairie dogs, woof. Okay, we'll talk about that, but this is really, really important. All this stuff's important, but if I had to circle one of those on that five list there, getting tuned in, asking the right question, if I had to circle one that's really, really a critical, number three, answering negative questions. Because this is what they're, why is that important? They're asking you, so tell me why you left company X. That's like, oop, landmine. Okay, so what's your biggest weakness? Whoop, there's another landmine. There's a chance for you to step on it and blow your leg off. And you will. You will. If you do it your way. So if I said, Mabel, what's your biggest weakness? What would you say? That's the first thing that would happen. She would pause and think about it, and we'd all be sitting there for 30 seconds waiting for an answer, and it makes everybody more uncomfortable. But when you say that, I'm just not picking on you, I'm just saying, what would you say? Okay, so she gave me the negative right up front. That's not what we want to do, but let's talk about that. Let's deal with it. Okay, I pulled you out because I just had to get somebody, so you were it. You got the luck of the draw. You get a free McDonald's Happy Meal. See Kim, and she'll get you that for you. Kim's got the coupons. Okay, negative questions. You will be asked negative questions. Why? Why would they want negatives? Because they want to know what?
Low risk.
What's wrong with you? Why shouldn't I hire you? I see all the reasons why you think I should hire you. You've got this wonderful resume, and oh boy, that's a nice looking suit, and you're so polite, and blah, blah, blah. But why shouldn't I hire you? So they're going to want to know what's going on. That's that hidden stuff. Remember the Johari window? That hidden box? Okay. Some of you are old enough to know Clara Peller. Who knows Clara Peller? Raise your hand, 3 or 4, 5 or 6. Some of you have seen Clara on TV say, "Hey, where's the beef?" Remember that? That little old lady, the two people next to her, and she's this little five foot tall, 5 foot around. Where's the beef? Well, that was a Wendy's commercial. But what was the point of the Wendy's commercial? Where's the beef? What's that?
They have a lot of beef in their sandwiches.
They have a lot of beef. It's the competitors didn't have any beef. They were at another competitor. Wasn't that Wendy's? They were at a competitor. Because they were so used to getting beef in their own sandwiches at Wendy's that they're at the competitors. Hey, where's the beef? Okay, so here's what it is. This is not that hard if you remember these little examples that I use, okay? I think they help. They help for years, so. Okay, so that's a Wendy's Where's the Beef illustration. Okay, so you see that thing in the middle there, that hockey puck? That is the beef. Where's the beef? Now, if we use that as an illustration, if we were to bite into this sandwich, now remember, the meat's in there, right? It's hiding behind the pickle, remember? But if we bite in that sandwich, what do we get?
Bread.
Nothing but bread. Now, we know the meat's there because we had our nose in the sandwich, so we can smell the meat, but we can't taste it, right? I mean, you've had that. We've all had that, right? You get down, you're eating the sandwich, and all of a sudden, there's nothing but bun left. because the meat kind of slid down and you ate too much of it already, so it's not proportional anymore. So you get nothing but bun, right? We've all been there at least once. Okay, and if not, seek him for another coupon at McDonald's. Okay, no pun intended, McDonald's. I'm sorry if you're getting this on the audio portion of our story. Okay. So this hockey puck here is the negative. So what do you think the buns are?
Positives.
Okay. Positives. So anytime you answer a negative question, you surround it with positive statements. Terrific. I was actually going to come back to you. So you told me earlier that impatience was your beef. So what's the opposite of being impatient? Okay, so tell me, give me illustrations of how you typically exercise patience.
Okay, so I'll give you an example of something that was negative, but I wanted to talk about.
Okay, what I'm looking for is examples of you demonstrating patience.
Okay, so at times I used to be,
That was the negative right up front. You see, it's not so easy. And that's okay, because it's not easy. It is not easy. This is not natural. Go ahead.
So I have come to the conclusion that I need to gain this trust. If I'm bad, I have to increase my communication with them. So I would communicate with them at a point where I can give in trust, right? And then I can start backing up my communication.
That's crystal clear. Clear as mud.
Really?
No. What? You didn't tell me a word about patience. It's a big fluffy bun surrounded with you got to give me. So let me tell you what it should sound like. Okay? Make it easy on you because I feel like I'm beating you up here. Sorry. So you told me that your biggest challenge is being impatient. And let's assume for sake of illustration that the job is being customer service person. Patience being a critical part of that, right? But I can be impatient. Okay. So you start by the obvious positive statement. What's the opposite of being impatient? You're patient. Well, you know, Mr. Jones, one of the things I've learned as a customer service representative, bless you, about this job is one of the most critical things is just being patient with people. I mean, we're not all on the same page all the time, and it's important to communicate effectively, which I really strive I work hard to make sure that we communicate effectively, but you know, I have to say honestly, sometimes you get impatient. On the other hand, you've learned through that process and how to better communicate, so the next time you face that same issue, you can improve your presentation to the person you're talking with. Did you smell the meat? But you didn't taste it. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, so let's use lack of a college degree as the negative. Okay, let's give you an illustration. Right back to you. Lack of a college degree. So what's the opposite of not having a college degree? Having experience or having a degree, right? Wanting a degree, working toward getting a degree. That's every time you got to talk negative, the first thing that should pop in your head is, Marty said talk positive, somehow related to that negative. Okay, so your temptation will go to immediately to talk to the negative. The reason is because we've been trained, probably by our families, to always immediately respond to the question. You know, you tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Yes, I'm impatient. No, we don't want, I know you are, okay. You're so impatient, you're going to tell me right out of the gate you're impatient. Okay? So you got to talk, you got to think and stop, catch your breath, and come at it positively first. So how would you respond if your weakness is a lack of education? How would you turn that into a positive? How would you start with a positive? You don't want to try. Okay. Anybody else want to try?
Okay, I have worked for the last 10 years on providing customer service, and I have provided solutions, and I have increased like 20%, 50% their satisfaction rate, for the department.
What does that have to do with education? You were just telling me your weakness was education. See? It's not easy. It really isn't. So if we were going to go there and we didn't have a degree, maybe we were working toward getting one, or we never did get one. You know, we just never had the opportunity. That's the weakness. That's the negative. So talk positively about what you did get. Well, biggest weakness. Well, you know, I guess we all have them. I guess I'm no different than anyone else. But frankly, I feel like I have a lot to offer because I've gained so much experience to counter any lack of education, although I've not finished my degree. But I am very much open to returning and getting ongoing education. I've completed my professional designation in my field, which did require some specialized training. But that's what I'd have to say about that. Positive, negative, positive. It's not easy. That's why I'm admitting it to you. It's not easy. But you just have to have your mindset that way. What's the opposite of the negative? What's the opposite? It would be having a degree or what you gain not having a degree, maybe practical experience, right? Give me another negative. We'll do it one more time. Anybody? Biggest? How about changing career fields with no experience in that field? There's a few of you that want to do that. Okay, so if I asked you, I can't read it from here. Is it Evan?
Yep.
Evan, so you went to college, you spent all that time, you spent a ton of money, you became a teacher, you worked in a big city. Doesn't that look like a lot of money for an investment for you not to continue an education? Now, did you make a mistake?
No, I did not make a mistake.
That's the negative, right up front. Tell me what you did. What did you gain? What did you gain from that investment?
I gained helping kids every day learn.
That's it. You know, Mr. Jones, I was proud to do what I did. I helped kids learn. And it was a big investment, but it really paid off because it taught me a lot about working with people. I feel I could take that same situation, although I am changing, I don't know anything about your industry. It taught me to take those same skills and reapply them in another way. And that's why I'm here today. So that's what you want to say, okay? You don't want to say, I wasted all my money. Of course you didn't. Are you kidding me? It was a tremendous investment. You should be proud of what you achieved. That's how you have to do it. You've got to stand up and be confident. And although it may perceive to be a negative, because you have no experience in our industry, demonstrate your attitude, your generic skills, to be able to apply those skills to this position. That's what they got to see. It's about attitude. That's important. All right, anybody else want to challenge a negative question? Yes. Yes, go ahead.
It's just a question.
Yes. Not hide.
Yeah.
We don't want to hide.
Yeah.
The beef's in there.
Yeah. I think good interviewers are trained, to cut off all this, stuff and see this beefing.
Okay, so see the beefing, I get that. Yeah. So here's the situation, okay? Like I said earlier, this is not easy. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you get good enough at it so that you're not coming up with this great big long story just to get to the meat, to come up with another great big long story. Okay, so that meat in that bun isn't, it's not this tiny. So it's huge, big, positive stuff. This is no different than the one-minute manager. Anybody ever read that? One-minute manager? Okay, a little supervisory. This is a little free stuff. Worth the price of admission. Okay? When you're managing someone and they have a problem, the last thing you want to do is go up and tell them about their problem. You're doing this wrong, and you do it wrong all the time, and I'm fed up with it. Get it straight, or you're out. Gosh, who would respond positively to that? The one-minute manager walks around and recognizes the positive things the person's contributing, because they're very valuable. But that doesn't mean everybody's doing everything right. So you talk about, you're a great person on the team. I know I can rely upon you to get things done effectively. But I have to tell you that I'm concerned about this getting done next week. So can you step it up? Okay? What I'd like to see by the end of the week is a report on my desk. And I know you can do it, because I know you're confident and capable. That's the one-minute manager approach. It's believing in the individual, but recognizing we got to be on the same page here, folks. It's no different here. You're just surrounding the negative. You're not telling them a great big story to try and dance around. We're not dancing around the negative. We're just telling it the way it is. That's why it's got to relate to the negative. That's why a couple of times here when Mabel gave me her response, I said, well, that has nothing to do with the question I just asked. It wasn't the subject. That's why you have to hit the subject. They've got to smell the meat, not taste it. That make any sense? So when you, next time somebody asks you a negative question, your first reaction will be to say the negative. And when you catch yourself, that, you know, the words are about ready to come out of your mouth, stop, think of Clara Peller, and come up with one of these sandwiches. So why did you leave your last employer? That's another negative. The assumption is there must have been something wrong, that's why you left. That's a bad assumption, but that's what they're going to think. So what would you say? Who left their last employer? Anybody? What would you say? Why did you leave?
It was time.
No, negative right out of the gate. See how easy that is to get caught?
Yeah.
I can reel you right in. It's so simple. Why did you join the employer? Why did you stay there as long as you did? That's the opposite. So tell me why you stayed there.
And it changed, and with the change of managers and a change of philosophy, I felt it was time to go. So I can go on to something more
challenging and rewarding. It's a big bun at the bottom there, not a little piece of meat. Big bun. That's it. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So you get the idea, right? Enough time spent on that? Now you got to practice it, because that's not easy. Because you always want to go first. Even though we're sitting here talking about it for 20 minutes, the first thing was going to the negative, because it's natural, because you want to answer the question. I want you to answer the question, just soften it up a little bit. It's like when your wife says, how does this dress, does this dress make me look fat? Oh my God, there's no way to get around that one.
Yes, it does, but you're a great cook.
Yeah, yeah. Honey, I love the way you wear dresses, and this is really your style. It looks great on you, it really does. But it's a little tight here, but you know, you might want to think of an option, but you know what? A little snip and tag here, and it would look great. Now, cooking has nothing to do with how she looks in a dress. I'm telling you, it's got to relate. Well, it might. Yeah, it could be. Okay, so let's not go there anymore. Remember, it's positive, negative, positive. Okay, one last comment so we can get done. It's almost 4 o'clock. Go ahead. Yes. Yes. So what you just told me was negative, positive. Now just put a positive in front of it. So they're asking you, what's your negative? What do you struggle with? How did you overcome it? That's the positive. There's the negative. Now start with the opposite. Tell me how you can apply your skills and how you've applied them despite having that challenge and what you've learned from going through that challenge. That's what's got to happen. Right? That's what's got to happen. If somebody walked into my office and did that, I probably would faint, because nobody does it. But it's so much better. It's like the music and the words. It's all right. I want to hear what you learned. I don't want you to, you know, chastise yourself. When I talk to an individual who has a problem, a weakness, an issue, whatever it is, that's okay. Nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. I'm just looking for you to acknowledge that you have a place to grow, that you've learned something. That's all I want. So if I want to know why you left your employer, the only time you ever come up with a negative first is when you really blew it. You were fired for some crazy reason. And you know what? If you don't get that opportunity because of that, you can't tap dance around that one. You got to tell them, you know, I made a really serious mistake. And I learned a very hard lesson from that. Here's what I did. But here's what I learned. And here's why I know I can be a more valuable person for your company. That's the only time you're ever going to come up with a negative first. Because now you're taking responsibility. It's about integrity. It's about taking ownership. Okay? That's what it's about. All right, we got to get to this next segment. Salary negotiations. Everybody wants to hear about money. So let's talk about money. Okay, for starters, when it comes to salary negotiations, there's a general rule about salary negotiations. It's their responsibility to make you an offer, not yours. Their responsibility to make you an offer. It's your responsibility to accept, reject, or negotiate that offer. That's it. Real simple. They'll always ask you, I will always ask a candidate, give me a sense of what you're looking for financially. And they will always tell me. Oh, I got to have this. Okay, terrific. Now I know what I got to pay you to get you. Well, the first who comes up with a number loses. It's called negotiations. So your job is to accept, reject, or negotiate an offer. So let's talk about this a minute. Okay, so here's how it's done. Something you always wanted to know but were afraid to ask. Let's see if this is... let's do it this way. It'd be easier for everybody to get. Okay, the job is, customer service, okay? Customer service rep. The standard for this job we're putting up here is associate's level education and 1 to 3 years experience. Okay? Every organization has to put some kind of a roadmap out there for their comp structure. You have to have it. You can't say, well, this, we just pulled numbers out of the rear and just, it works. You have to have a comp structure because everything's related, right? That person who's a first level customer service person shouldn't be paid as if they were a fifth level, right? So there's this promotable path and structure and so on. Yes?
When you say comp structure, you mean compensation structure.
Yes. Did I, yeah. Do we know comp?
Everybody might know that slang.
Okay, sorry. Comp means compensation. Got me? Okay. So comp means compensation. Every job that exists, a standard is set within an organization. So let's assume for a moment that we've said our first level customer service rep for the standard is an associate's level education and probably 1 to 3 years of prior experience. Doesn't necessarily have to be in our industry, but 1 to 3 years of experience. Okay? When we do the research study, we have companies we pay to get a survey. There are companies out there that will go out and survey 10,000 employers, all having customer service reps, and they'll put all those people with 1 to 3 years of experience at an associate level on this continuum. And they'll see, okay, based upon everybody we talk to, all these companies, all these people holding these jobs within that general range, the midpoint for that job, meaning 50% people make more than that, 50% people make less than that, the midpoint is $40,000. Just as an illustration. Okay? Therefore, as a result of knowing what that midpoint is, this is just a target. It allows you to put in a program around it, a compensation program. So the way I choose to do it is something called broadbanding. Okay? And all that means is, for somebody who is fully qualified, FQ, fully qualified, what does that mean? That means they have an associate's level education and 1 to 3 years experience. Okay? If they're fully qualified and they meet that expectation, that's what the $40,000 means, that they should get $40,000 on average. Now, some people are going to get less, some people are going to get more, right, because they're more or less off the target, but that's the midpoint. And then I say, okay, if that's midpoint, then plus or minus 10% is the range for somebody in that situation, because they could have 1 year experience or they could have three. So maybe the 3 years experience should have 44. Every job that's out there has got this going on. But what if the person has 6 months experience? What happens then? Well, this is $1 less than the low end of fully qualified, but this is 20% off midpoint, $32,000. Okay? So this is entry level. So they're not really fully qualified to do that job because they have something less than the standard that the research shows $40,000 is the midpoint. So if $32,000 is the extreme light end, what about somebody that's more than 3 years? What if they got 3.5, but I can't bring them in as a senior customer service rep because they got to work here to demonstrate they can earn that? Well, I got to pay them more than this market point because they've got more than the standard. Because we just learned that standard is set at the 50th percentile at 40,000. So this is plus $1 off the high end, and this is plus 20%. Okay? So how we put somebody in that range, how you will be put into a comp offer, is based on three things, typically. One, your actual comparative to that. So your comparative to the standards. Where do you fit in that range based upon whether you have the experience or don't you? Okay? The second factor we look at is it's the expectations. Okay, so for example, if that customer service rep is expected to work from 11 p.m. till 7 in the morning, that's a little higher expectation that somebody's working 8 to 5. Or maybe that customer service rep fields 50 calls a day, but the one that we, you know, another one is 50 calls an hour. You can have the same job with higher expectations or lower. Higher expectations demands higher comp. So you look at that situation, and what are we actually expecting this person to do? And then the third factor we look at is performance. Because there's a lot of A players, and there's a lot of B players, and there's a lot of C players. So it's not just what you do, but it's how you do it. We can all be customer service reps, but without question, there are some people, because of attitude, their approach will be, I'm really aggressive, I'm going to get this done, assertive, I'm going to get it done. And I'm going to be better than anybody else. I'm going to show you how this is done. Then there are people that say, I'm just kind of marking time, I just got to pay the bills. And so performance plays a part. Now, when you hire somebody new, there's no way to know that because you don't know what their performance is. You haven't seen it happen yet, right? So really, when you're hiring somebody new, you're looking at factors 1 and 2. You're also taking into consideration where they are at current comp. So this person might come in and they're at current comp at 31.7. So we know by comparative standards, if they meet these two standards, it's a normal expectation and a normal standard comparison, they are undercompensated in the marketplace, which is probably why they're looking for a new job. So if I'm going to be fair to this individual, I'm not going to pay them $32,000 because they have 1 to 3 years experience. They should really earn more in the $40,000 range because that's realistic, that's market. I want to keep that person here, not have them leave just after they come aboard. But I don't know how they're going to perform yet. I haven't seen it. So I'm probably going to come back at an offer that's going to be somewhere between $36,000 and $40,000. But do the math. If I'm making 31.7 and I offer you 36, what kind of a percentage increase is that? Better than 10%, right? Right? That's a pretty good jump. 10% is pretty good. It takes you 3 years to do that normally, right? Every 3 years you get a 3% increase. Every year, rather, you get a 3% increase. So I'm just using these lower numbers just to give you a perspective. But my point is, that's how it's done. So when you go in there to interview for a job, every job in the company, every job, has one of these comp ranges associated with it. And higher up you go in the company, there's usually some impact on compensation from a bonus perspective. Because the more you command the company, the greater opportunity you have to affect its profitability. So this position might get a base salary at $40,000, but they might have a bonus potential of 4%, which means $1,600. So they've got an extra $1,600 they can earn if they do everything they were supposed to do, and of course if the company's profitable, to be able to pay bonuses. That's how the world works. If this was a $140,000 job and the person was a director level, that bonus might be 20%, 30% of their base, because they have more at risk. They have a greater opportunity to affect the profitability of the company. That's just life, just the way it is, right? A director of a function is probably going to have a bigger impact because of managing everything that's happening than that one person making those calls. Now, that one person is important. I'm not diminishing that. I'm just saying that from where they sit in their 6x8 space, their 24 square foot of responsibility, the director is bound to have more impact. Therefore, that's why bonuses are what they are. And research will show us exactly what those ranges should be. Okay. So now they talk to you and they like you and you fit this standard, okay? And you're making 31.7. So it's reasonable for me to come back at you and offer you $36,000. So now I come to you and I say, Judy, this job pays $36,000. And you're going, wow, 31.7. Okay, yeah, that's 36,000. Where do I sign? Sign me up. Wrong. Okay? Because every job has a range to it. So if you meet that standard and I offer you 36, I'm thinking as an HR guy, that's 5,000 bump. That's a pretty good increase. She'll probably take that. That gives us a lot of headroom to give her more increases as she performs, because I don't know what she's going to do yet. Right? I can go from 36 all the way to 48 and still be pretty good in your comp range. Give you a year or two to mature in that role until I promote you to the next level up, which is a senior customer service rep, let's say. And maybe the midpoint instead of 40, maybe the midpoint's 60. So that job overlaps this job. So, you know, if the midpoint is, let's just say, maybe it's 50, it's going to be like right here. So it's going to start, the senior's going to start up here and have three boxes. And they overlap that way. Every company does this. Now, they might not use the broadbanding approach. I find it more effective than others I've tried. This approach works pretty well. But as it relates to you and the job offer, when they make you an offer, okay, they're going to ask you, what kind of money do you need? What are you looking for? How much are you making in your last job? What would you say if they said, what kind of money do you need? What are you looking for? What should your response be? I just told you, it's their job to make you an offer.
Could you tell them what you made in your last company? However, I'm very negotiable.
Okay, so if you tell them what you made in your last company, now I know you only made 31.7. Okay, so now maybe I can get away with 36. And what does that have to do with this new job? Because I don't care what you made really in your previous job, ultimately. I'm going to pay you to keep you competitively in my job.
Would you say, you start explaining what experience, like, I have the associate degree, I have 3.5 years.
Nope, because you don't know that standard right now. They do, but you don't.
It's not like it. Some of them have.
Yeah, well, some of the surveys out there are public, but they're not right. Because they look, just a little note of advice here. When you go out there and you look at, like, salary.com, that's averaging all kinds of jobs all dumped together, and some of them may not match. When we look at very specific comp surveys, we're looking at a survey that's specific to the industry, size of company, geographic differences. All those things impact the money that's actually dispersed.
But what if you okay? Take a pay cut? I mean, like that's what I'm finding. You might feel
okay, so the answer mm-hmm. is not about having to take a pay cut. The answer is, they said, well, how much money do you need? What are you looking for? The answer is, Mr. Jones, I'd be very happy to consider any offer you might make that you believe is commensurate with the responsibility of the role. That's it. Well, then give me a number. Give me some kind of a number. Well, again, I'm very flexible, open, and negotiable. Can you give me a sense of what the comp range might be for this position? So what did you just hear? Positive statement, and I turned it back around to try and get them to give me a sense of what the range is. And by the way, if you use that approach, they know you know there's a range involved. Okay? They're going to say, well, I'm sorry, I can't divulge that information. Well, again, I don't want to put you on the spot, Mr. Jones, but I like what I hear. I think we can get together on this. I can only tell you I'll be more than willing to consider any offer you deem appropriate. That's how it's played. As soon as you come up with a number, you lose. As soon as you say, well, I was making 31.7, so I got to have some kind of a, I'm going to give you 5% over that and think we're done, when you could have gotten 36 or 40. That's how it works. Yes, ma'am. Yep. Yep. You have to think of a total package. When you have to come up with, if somebody asks you, what are you making now? So let's assume that your base is 31.7, but you get a bonus, you get benefits, you get blah, 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 and your total package is like 50,000 with benefits. So you would say, my total package is in the mid-50s.
Okay.
If they just want base, then say mid-30s. But if you have to actually enter a number, then you have to enter $32,000. Because you're not going to lie.
Correct.
You have no other choice. That's the way it's designed. But again, it is the way it is, okay? That's the way it's designed. That's why I'm telling you, it's not your job to negotiate. I'm sorry, to give them the number. It's your job to negotiate the number. And they will make an offer, based upon their... So if you've done all this stuff right, trust me when I tell you they're going to be chomping at the bit to get you to come to board. They don't want to lose you now. We just got through all this interview stuff. You're the person. You don't think they're going to budge for 5 or 10% more? Yeah, they will. They will. So long as you made the case that you're that valuable. But if you come across like I'm scared to death, I'm never going to get a job, I've been making 31, but I got to... You've just built a case against it. They know you're desperate. If you're desperate, they're going to take whatever I give you. But if the employer's smart, they're going to offer you something that is at least competitive, okay, so that they don't lose you just after they hired you. Because you're not going to go down the street. They don't want you to go down the street. Question?
Like when you're filling out an application online, mm-hmm. And you have to plug in a number, like I was making 38 at my last
mm-hmm.
class, so what's a safe number for me to put?
Like I said, if you have the opportunity to put a total package in there, if there's some, usually what happens is there's a number space and then there's a space where you can make a comment, usually, okay? So you're going to put the number in that makes sense. So you're going to say, if you had bonus potential, you're going to add that in there because that's part of it. We got to compare apples and apples, right? So you're going to put the number in that makes sense. If it was 38 and a $2,000 bonus, it's 40. If it was, if absent benefits. So you should know, yes, you should know that, yep. Well, that's good if you can do that.
Oh, you can do
but
that.
Oh, yes.
The other thing I heard, here's the question, is I've also seen where they've gotten wise to that trick, and then they make you put a number in that box
right.
And you move on.
Yes.
And a lot of things I've read have said put in zero, and then basically refuse to answer the question and then save that question for later. It sounded like, and something I've heard from my mom, that you would advise against that because that isn't in line with the technique.
At the end of the day, you want to be honest about where you are. And if you put zero in there, they're going to say, wait a minute. So either the guy made no money in this last job or he's playing with me, right? Because he's not giving me the numbers I need to know. At the end of the day, they're going to make you an offer. That's what their job is. So they'll come back and they'll say, well, we'd like to offer you this job at $36,000. Now it's your opportunity to go back and say, well, I'm very open to whatever the situation might be. And I really like the job that we've talked about. But as you already know from my previous disclosure, this is where I am in the mid-30s. There must be some flexibility for this. What kind of flexibility do you have in terms of a base adjustment? So you assume there's flexibility, because guess what? There is. Okay? And now they're going to come back at you with something different. That's how it's played. Accept, reject, or negotiate. So I would suggest to you that if the offer is reasonable, don't fight about $1,000 one way or the other. You'll get it eventually. But if it's appropriate and reasonable, then go for it. Employers don't necessarily expect you, some do, to push back and negotiate. They expect to come in low because they can always go up. You can't go down, you can always go up. Usually, there's some flexibility there to go up. Usually, okay? As I've already indicated, we know the range is there, but they're not going to say, I'm offering you 36 and then come back at you and give you 48. That's not going to happen. Because if they could go that high out of the gate, they would have done it by comparison because they didn't want to lose you. Okay, so accept, reject, or negotiate. There is a realistic range. There is a base range and a total compensation package. When you talk about discussing your current compensation, you speak in terms of a range. My total compensation package based bonus benefits was in the mid to upper 30s or mid to upper 40s or whatever. Don't say 37, 205, and so on. Again, your responsibility is to accept, reject, or negotiate. How do you negotiate the offer? I've already given you an illustration of that. You might utilize leverage, like your difference that you have a bachelor's degree instead of an associate's level. When I saw the job description, Mr. Jones, it indicated an associate's level education in 1 to 3 years. Well, I have to point out to you that I do have a bachelor's education and 4 years of experience, and I'm hoping that your comp range is adjusted accordingly for that additional background that I offer your company. Certainly, there must be some flexibility. Can you give me a sense of what that might be? I'm very interested in the opportunity, and I don't want to put a snag in our process, but I would like you to consider the possibility of my increased value. You're just doing it politely, honestly, openly, and direct. And then once the offer's confirmed and you believe you've got it there, sometimes you can negotiate things like off-tax benefits, parking space, free lunch, you know, stuff like that. Early reviews sometimes when you don't get what you want. I mean, you can do that. Some companies provide lunches to their people. Some people, positions do come with certain benefits, perks, okay? Differences. You always want to confirm your offer back in writing. So at the end of the day, if you have all agreed to it, send them an email, send them a letter, whatever you have to do. Emails work. Nowadays, it's okay to do it that way. Send an email that's very appropriately grammatically correct, indicating, thank you for the generous offer. I'm very excited about working for your company. I really feel we have a lot to work with together. I've enjoyed our conversations, and I officially accept your offer of $40,000 beginning May 1st. Cordially yours, your next new employee. And that goes a long way, okay? So confirm your acceptance, put it in writing. Okay, last thing I want to cover, because we're really running behind right now, is that you maximize every opportunity. And briefly, at the end of the day, at the end of the interview, you want to kind of quickly summarize what just happened. Well, thanks for talking with me today, Mr. Jones. I appreciate your time. I've learned an awful lot about the position, and thank you for sharing with me some of your personal perspectives and sharing with me your own background. I want you to know I'm very excited and encouraged by our conversation. I hope to be able to take us to the next step. What would that next step likely be? When would I anticipate hearing from you? You want to tee that up. It won't be, well, thanks, we just talked with you, we'll let you know, we'll call you. Even if they said that back to you, it's going to be, okay, well, that's great, that's fine, and I'll certainly be able to defer to your judgment here, but do you have some reasonable expectation as to when you'd like to fill the position? You got to get out of there with some kind of a time frame so you're not waiting for the phone to ring. Okay? And in the event that that thing goes south, you're not the person hired. You just made a warm referral out of that candidate, out of that employer, right? Because they got to know you. Now that person knows a lot of people. So while it wasn't necessarily a fit at this time, it could be for future in the company. It could be that you don't fit in the company, but you might fit with somebody else he knows. So now you can turn it into a referral interview process. Remember the rain that Kim talked about? So anytime you get that far, you've got an opportunity. Intercompany referrals is what I'm referencing on your thing. Future consideration, that job may not be the job today, but you could perhaps get another job within the company. It wouldn't be the first time we brought somebody in, we thought they fit, but we found out they're more than what we bargained for. So we like them a lot, we just can't put them up into this job. Okay? So, case in point, I've got a young gentleman who's we interviewed about a year ago, year 9 months ago, for a sales position with our organization. Unfortunately, he lives up in the Sandusky area. He's a solid hour and 10 minutes away from us to get to the office, and we'd have to bring him in to train him. Well, over the course of the process, he stayed in touch with me. And actually, we've opened a branch in Toledo. As a result, he just became a prime candidate. And the reason he became a prime candidate is because he was persistent in staying in touch with me every 3 to 4 months. Hey, just want to let you know I'm still out here and very interested in Oswald. So we didn't get sour grapes because we said no right then and there. Don't burn a bridge. You might be tempted to do that. Don't burn a bridge, okay? Follow up. Stay on top of the situation. If he says he's going to get back to you in 10 days and he doesn't, call him back. Call him on it. Hi, Mr. Jones. I hope you'll forgive me for being persistent. But we did say we'd get back together in about 10 days. It's been actually 10 days. I just thought I'd follow up. I've got a couple of other things brewing right now, and I'm just hoping I can work with your company. Can you give me a sense of when you might be able to make a decision on this situation?
Well, the company drags it out for months.
Well, like, you're on to the next thing. That's the other thing. Somebody said don't put all your eggs in one basket, whatever that means, because somebody could break them all and you'd be left with a mush. You want to look at every opportunity you can simultaneously. If you sit back waiting, like you've got this thing in my hand, it's going to happen any day now, and what do? Well, you wait for that to happen, and it never does. Meanwhile, you just lost a whole month of traction that you built up in your job search. The best position you can be in is to have multiple offers occurring at the same time. Okay? Every employer, that's their worst nightmare. Okay? Because, you know, well, I've got this option, this option. I'm very interested in your company, but they made me this offer, and I'm kind of torn on what to do. Obviously, the offers are a little different. Is there anything we can do to work together to get me closer? Because I'd really like to work for your firm. I mean, if you have multiple options, that's a great place to be. That's why it's always best to get a new job when you have a job. because you've got more leverage, because you're not going to just jump for nothing. And every employer knows that. You're not going to walk backwards to go to a new job. Okay. Maximize every opportunity. Get tuned in. All that good stuff. You are now officially dangerous. Okay? You were half dangerous before. You know, two-thirds of the way. Now you're fully dangerous. A lot of stuff there. A lot of information. But all very effective stuff. I'm telling you. I saw it for years. I coached it for years. Taught people how to do this for years. And it works if you apply it. Okay? You have to apply it. You got to be diligent. This is not an easy process. So practice your negative statements. Think about compensation. Think about all those models I gave you. All right. Guys, team, questions. We have a few minutes for questions. If there are any, I know we asked them all along the way. But if there are any remaining issues, I think we're supposed to adjourn at 4:30. It's 4:25, so we're pretty much on target. We're willing to stay as long as you want, within reason, but, you know, obviously. So, any particular questions? This young lady has one. Okay. Yeah, we're doing this because of the radio thing, so please speak into the microphone.
My question was, when you're doing the negotiation, if they offer you a number, do you go back with a different number, or do you just keep it an open statement?
Keep it an open statement. Don't give them the number. It's accept, reject, or negotiate. You always give them the chance to come up with a different number. Next question. Is that mic working?
I have a question about networking.
Yes.
I currently live an hour away, but I would like to relocate out in this area. Mm-hmm. So what is the best way for me to network with people out here when I live an hour away?
Kim, you want
to? I think that, and I think this one's on too, right? Yes, it is. Okay, good. Really, if you want to network, and you, I mean, an hour is, I mean, it's not that far. I mean, so that's a good good consideration. Really, if you are coming in for specific events, you know, and to meet people that way, so you're not just driving in just to hang around, but you're going to a professional society meeting or a lecture or something like that where you know it will be connected with them. And you could also, as you're looking up people on LinkedIn, I mean, you want to look at, because it will have a city that they're in. So that's yet another way that I don't know. I wouldn't think that would be any barrier at all, actually.
Just networking long distance, because I find, like, I'm not very good at networking, period. So, and it kind of scares me. So just, I guess, doing it long distance to me, because I work all week, so mm-hmm. coming in at night is going to be a challenge, mm-hmm. and coming into events and things like that, like, I'm going to have to make time for it. So I want to make the most of my time, and what's the, I guess, the best way to do that?
That's very wise. I think that, you know, and perhaps the best thing for you to do to start off with is just set a goal of like one a month or two a month or something like that, and make sure that you choose an event or something that will give you the most return or the most likely return, and just see how it goes. Because, yeah, I mean, you're not going to be, and especially in the wintertime, you're going to be driving long distances. But I can tell you, my professional society, we've got people driving in from Erie, Pennsylvania. We've got a guy who drives down from Michigan. We have people coming up from Columbus and from Pittsburgh, and it'll be because it'll be a speaker or a topic that they're very interested in that they think will be helpful for them. And I think that probably, that's what I would do if I was you. Go ahead, Kim.
So in my opinion, networking face-to-face is always the preferred, but networking by telephone is better than no networking. So I would tell you, okay, so you're an hour away, so let's find some telephone calls that you can make productive and still be making progress. So.
I would also suggest that you use LinkedIn. You know, in mails and connections through LinkedIn, you can research organizations that way that you might want to approach and directly in mail them in order to be able to potentially network using that resource.
Now LinkedIn has five in-mail limit,
yes,
for the unpaid service, but they also have a deal like where you can have a free month as a trial basis of the premium service. So you have to pick your month, but then you would have the option of sending multiple messages. So it would be a matter of planning, then kicking that off. So that's another thing.
Other questions about any topic from the beginning, part one, part two, part three? Yes, Mabel?
Mabel?
Here comes the microphone. There you go. Thank you.
My question is regarding following up.
Yep.
So how much of, you know, of that is enough? Like you said, I'm going to follow up with you in 2 weeks. And, you know, the 2 weeks come and you send an email, you either call. I don't know. Well, that's another question. Is calling appropriate if you are, you have been communicating with an employer, a potential employer, via email? Can you call them?
Absolutely.
All right. So you either call or send an email, right, within that time frame. But after that, you still don't hear from them, so.
You continue the process. You, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, this gentleman that I mentioned from Toledo, he's tried to approach us by email and phone for 9 months. I don't know if I finished that story. Did I finish that story? Maybe I did.
Yes,
I'm going to offer him a job Monday to be our guy in Toledo. That's because he was persistent, and every single person that interviewed with him said, you know, this guy's really showing some chutzpah. You know, this guy's really, he wants to work here. Yes. Well, if you're, I mean, I guess after a while you'd have to take the hint, you know, that they don't want to talk to you. But I would try two or three times beyond that, because people get lost in the email process. I'd send an actual hard copy letter too.
I think you need to find the balance between, you have to be persistent without being a pest.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And persistent. When I was doing networking, I mean, I'd call people 6 times, more than that, because I'm just going to talk to that person. And eventually, I wasn't being a pest. I was like every week or every couple of weeks, just touch base whenever you get a chance. But I was being persistent, and that paid off. For some people, they're not going to return the first call, they're not going to return the second. But maybe the sixth one, they will.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anybody else? Speak now. Now, again, we have all these things we're going to do in the next few weeks, right? And we really hope to see a lot of you there if you can make it. It's a great 2 hours. I mean, it comes and goes quickly. And you'll really learn a lot more deep dive in all these areas. But we don't want to ignore your questions at the moment because this is all kind of fresh in your heads.
Did you say earlier about the, like, I think it's this Thursday is the resume one?
Is it? Thursday, Ken? When's the first?
It's next Thursday, yeah.
It's right. It's in the front page of your outline, the actual dates and content, and the people that will be leading those sessions. Chances are pretty good you'll catch a couple of us, even though, like, Ken may be leading Tuesday. 2 or 3 of us may be there. So just to kind of help, if we can get there. Thursday the 29th is resume writing. I guess I'm doing that. But we'll be here.
Yeah, you don't have to bring your resume, but it would
be really
great if
idea.
You could. Yeah.
Yeah. Bring your resume, we can critique it and give you some constructive direction on how to improve it. You know, building it from scratch is not what that session's about. It's about giving you illustrations and pointers on effective resume writing.
Where's room 203? Is it?
Second floor of the main building.
Oh,
far end of the hall.
Yeah.
It's
a much smaller room than this. You know, it's a regular classroom that we use for Sunday schools.
It's Dan Larison's class, yeah. So you want to go upstairs and then down almost as far as the children's wing.
Oh, you don't come in the center.
You can come in whatever entrance you'd like, but that's where you'd go.
Yep. Okay, we'll stay as long as you want us to. So what other questions do you have? Does this make sense? Was it helpful, I guess? Now, don't just nod your head if you think there was a problem, because we want to learn from this too. Is there something else we can do to help you right now? Because that's why we're doing this, you know. We're doing this because it's very close to our hearts. We want to help you land the right opportunity, whatever that means. And let me say this while I'm thinking about it. I brought business cards here. So if anybody wants my business card, as you go out there and start interviewing, you have questions you want to ask somebody, I will promise to get back to you. I can't promise it'll be that minute you call me, given my schedule and travels and so on, but I'd be happy to be of assistance to you as reasonably as I can. But I'll be happy to pass them out. Yes?
What's the best way to contact you?
Email's great. You know, that's obviously my whole information is there at Oswald. You can call me if you have to, but I may not be available to you that second. But, you know, sooner or later, I will get back to you. It won't be a long later. Might not be that day, but might be the next one. But so don't call me Monday. Sunday, I'm going to Boston for a diversity and inclusion conference. I'll be gone for 3 days. But if you want to get me on the question, shoot me an email. I'll be looking at my email every night. Yes, sir. Microphone.
For the resume on the header, now I realize I'm jumping the gun a little bit because
I haven't had
the resume
Jump.
Section. Someone suggested to me putting the LinkedIn URL along mm-hmm. with the email and so forth, but putting a hyperlink on a PDF so that they can just click on it mm-hmm. and edit it so that you don't have all of the characters in the URL.
Yeah, if everybody else understands what he's asking, when you set up your LinkedIn page, they'll create this URL thing, and it's just this generic kind of multi-number thing. You can actually click on it, change the wording to your name or whatever to make it work. But you can add it. Now, is it absolutely essential? Not really. If they know your name, they can look you up on LinkedIn. But what's more important is if you have a private email address. You know, like I use for a business address, my first name dot last name at gmail.com for if I'm doing it my own personal business. I have an AOL account because that's where I started with my kids way back when, and it just never went away, okay? I also have, of course, my account at the office, which is my first initial last name at oswaldcompanies.com. If anybody wants to find me, any one of those will work eventually.
Thank you.
Other questions? Are we all experts? Are we all worn out? Been a long day, right? 8 o'clock, 4:30, let's get going to work.
Wow.
Like going to work. It's only half a day for Ken and I. Right? What's that? Yeah, sure. Ken, are there any more questions before we stop for the day? Anybody else? Going once? Going twice? Okay, Ken's going to close in prayer with us real quick. You want me to? I will do that. Okay. I'm just going to close us in prayer real quick, and then you're dismissed. Go on your way. Okay? Father, thank you for this time together, Lord. I pray that Father, the information that was communicated here today is helpful. If it helps just one person in this room, Lord, we're blessed. But Lord, we pray, we know that you have a plan for every single person's life. We know that you've encouraged us that way, that you know our future. We trust in you. We rely upon you to open our eyes. Help us, Father, to take this information and apply it effectively. And Father, please help us to work with each other, support each other as we go about this process of looking for whatever the new opportunity holds, because we know you have our future in your hands and our plan is ahead. Thank you for this day. Please get us home safely, and we trust in you, Lord, in Christ's name. Amen.